Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now on to the KevCast.
Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for joining the KevCast. I'm so glad you came back for another episode. I'm so humbled and honored that you give your time to even tune in. And I'm so grateful when you share these podcasts and posts with your friends and family. I do write them and create them in hopes that they're conversation starters and that you send them to people that you know. And I think we all know somebody who can benefit from these kinds of things. So, you know, hey, why not just forward them on to the people you love and see where it goes? Today, we're going to have a post called Why We Cry. Why We Cry. And if you're like me, you probably don't think you cry a lot, especially by common definitions. In fact, I don't cry in the outward expression of crying almost ever. As a result, years ago, my wife gave me a nickname called the cold-hearted bastard. Not because I was mean or a jerk or anything, but just like, how can you go so long without crying was essentially behind it. And it's today I'm going to reveal if you are like me, or if you're married to someone like me, or you have a relationship with someone like me. I'm going to show you why we cry, and I'm going to explain how we actually cry. It is very nuanced, and it's amazing. And I think it's going to be something you're going to end up sharing with people you know and love. At least that's my hope. So let's get started. Why we cry. You see, on average, women cry 5 times more than men, but we all cry. And some people, like I said earlier, like myself, we rarely have a big crying event. But we do find ourselves weeping periodically. And weeping may not even involve tears. Weeping might be just a subtle wincing within. But if you research crying, you'll discover that there are 3 kinds of tears, right? We have the basal tears, which are basically our eye lubrication and drainage. We have what we call reflex tears, which are caused by irritation like dust or onions and things like that. And then we have what they call psychic tears. And these are linked to strong emotions. So fear, sadness, pain, stress, you know, all those types of things can create tremendous emotions, which are linked to tears and crying. And it's the psychic tear that is our focus today. Now, the Greek word for soul, which you see throughout Scripture, is psuche. That's where we get our word psychology. And so when we're talking about psychic tears, we're talking about soul-level tears, or soul crying. And soul crying, it need not be an emotional meltdown, although it certainly can be. It's often, though, a very subtle, tearless release. It's a deep inner awareness that hints at strong emotions. And so it's like linked to these strong emotions, and it kind of bumps up on them like pulling a string on a guitar. A slight touch creates a vibration. And if you're sensitive and you have inner awareness, you will see this string being strummed in your life. And that is actually an aspect of soul crying. That's the aspect on the low end of the experience spectrum. And of course, a deep soul sobbing crying event might be on the other side of this experience. So soul crying is really, the best I can describe it, is an experience with awe. It's the dawn of light illuminating the depth that is our very life. Now, while science can reverse engineer the process to kind of reveal the psychic or soul crying as directly connected to neurotransmitters that are produced in our hypothalamus, science is unable to get us much farther. Scientific observations can't go beyond the tier limbic system framework. And that's because science is actually incapable of exploring the subjective. Think about that. Science views non-physical reality often as an oxymoron. And so while science is true, crying actually proves that it's not all that is true. Because what's happening goes deeper than just our limbic system. You see, the reason we cry goes beyond the acetylcholine, which is a neurotransmitter crossing our synapses. You see, words here are tiny little tools, and I'm employing them to describe something which is not a thing. And that's why science can't get here. And this not a thing, or this no thing, is experienced in countless ways. You see, it's an experience. It's not a thing, an external label thing. And our eyes can barely make it out, but it's in full view of the eyes of our heart. Right? I'm getting at this experience. The soul crying is an experience with awe. And we all recognize some aspect of it, but nobody has perfect proximity to it. And that's a key part. You see, our relative distance to this no thing is directly proportional to our psychic or soul crying. Now, I know that's a lot, and it sounds vague, it sounds abstract, because it is. What is this no thing that I'm struggling to describe? The answer is beauty. Beauty is why we cry. You see, all forms of crying are the perfect response to beauty. Crying is the complete, wordless expression for that which is beyond words. Crying is the complete, wordless experience for that which is beyond words. Crying is the cathartic intersection of the eternal with the temporal. Think about this. Yearning and longing at a deep, deep level, they are low-level crying. You see, we intuit them as the event horizon for unconsummated beauty. Crying cleanses us experientially without us having to explain anything, defend anything, or pretend to be anything other than what we are. Soul crying is our authentic deep calling to deep, like it says in Psalm 42. That's amazing. Science can prove that there's a physical, emotional link in our bodies, but it takes spirituality to expose the holistic proximity to the eternal within the soul, or psyche, or psuche. You see, beauty is accessed by every single person, in every single time, in every single place. Nobody is ever missed. Some experience beauty more than others. Now, tears of joy illuminate beauty a little bit easier than other kinds of tears. Tears of sadness or loss are proximal to beauty, meaning they're close to beauty because sadness proves that beauty is seen but not possessed. Right? We mourn not our loved ones, but the experience of beauty only they provided. You see, we cry for either consummated or unconsummated beauty. That's why we cry. It's either this thing that we finally got. It's the forgiveness that we don't deserve. It's the love that we can't believe we're experiencing. Or it's the love we know exists but can't experience. You see, you thought you were depressed, but the cry within us is the taproot of true homesickness. Homesickness proves you cry for beauty. It's unconsummated, but it's beauty nonetheless. You see, beauty is the impetus of every creative endeavor that we would go into. It's behind and before and surrounding all that we make, all that we do, or all that we seek. You don't go after something unless beauty is the impetus behind it. It's the thing that pulls you into it. Your creative divine impulse comes from beauty. And crying is the human circumference that surrounds all these facets of experience and knowledge and hopes and dreams. And when somebody's talking about something that you long for or hope for, deep within you is a cry that says, yes, me too. I want that. I long for that. It's because you too, every endeavor is starting from beauty. Beauty is from where you come from, and beauty is where you long to go. It's homesickness. It's why you cry. It's why I cry. You see, it contains all of them. Crying contains all of our experiences and knowledge and hopes and dreams and longings. Crying is the experience that sums up all that we cannot count or carry. Crying is that point where we say, there's so much here, I can't put words around it. It's the wordless expression for that which is without words. You see, our ambitions are birthed in beauty, even though they're often distorted as we go about trying to pursue them. Beauty is why we cry. Gratitude is beautiful. Suffering and loss are ultimately beautiful. Awe is beautiful. Creation is beautiful. Struggle is beautiful. Tears are beautiful. Ecclesiastes 3 verse 11 says, God has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also put eternity into our hearts, yet so that we cannot find out what God has done from the beginning and the end. Beauty has been put in you in an unconsummated way. And you will feel an aspect of that consummation and experience satisfaction. And there is the unconsummated aspect of beauty that you know as dissatisfaction or suffering. See, crying is the eternity within making contact with the eternity beyond. Beauty hybridizes consummation with isolation. It hybridizes satisfaction with loss. It results in our tears. And beyond our words or descriptors, pain and joy are joined together. They're lost together in beauty, and this brings forth our cry. You see, crying releases tension because it forces us out of the trap of duality. See, the slightest glimpse of beauty will trigger a reaction, no matter how faint. We feel it, and then we make a decision. Are we going to be with this beauty, or are we going to turn away? Now, whether we run toward or from beauty, we are affected by beauty. You see, vulnerability and calluses are both caused by beauty. And both forms cause a cry within us. The cry of the soul is known deeper than our own outcrying. the beauty of nature kind of explains this in a very subtle, restorative way, right? We get this. There's a little bit of us that gets it when we go out and we're one with nature, if it's even over a lunch hour or for an entire weekend or a trip. Being with nature, taking it in, and grounding ourselves in the present, we kind of recalibrate our priorities, and that deep soul cry emerges, that voice that beckons us beyond into a bigger life. When you're out in nature and you're contemplating, what am I doing with my life? Where am I going? What is really important? Am I on track? This is the cry coming out from the beauty and the experience of nature. And so it comes out in all of these ways. And I'm struggling to use these metaphors and expressions. And it might be confusing you a little bit to hear it. Maybe you need to replay this a couple times to get at the nuances that I baked into this. But the best advice I can offer you is to learn the voice of the cry within you. Whether the cry is tearful, or whether the cry is contemplative, whether your cry is out loud in pain, or it's faint and distant inside. Either way, it is a road that leads you to beauty. Now, when you see beauty, don't turn away. Just bow your head in the moment, surrender to it, and follow it. Follow beauty. As you gaze into the face of beauty, your head will again rise and your life will gain incremental restoration. You see, beauty and tears are the foundation of the new world.
Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.